My name is Micah Laney. I've worked at Walmart for 16 years now, which is a long time. Within my time at Walmart, I've done quite a bit of everything. I started out as a tech support manager and worked my way into building apps and websites. And from there, just hung out with the social media team until they finally got so tired of me hanging around that they decided to let me join them, which was awful nice of them. The first thing they gave me to do was said, hey, our CEO is on Facebook and Instagram. How would you like to run that? And me not knowing what that meant or what was involved in that, of course, said, sure, sounds like fun. And it is. It's a ton of fun. That was 2 years ago, and I've loved every minute of it. Just some general housekeeping stuff. If you want to tweet at me, use the back channel to talk about me. It's at Micah Laney on just about any social platform out there. And if you guys come up with some questions afterwards and don't want to ask in the group, or 3 days from now you're like, I should have asked that, there's my email address as well. It's just micah.laney@walmart.com. There is no dash in Walmart anymore. Did you guys hear that? So RIP to the dash. Before we get started, I just wanted to talk a little bit about Walmart. Now, some of you I know are pretty familiar with Walmart and what that involves, but a lot of people don't realize that Walmart, besides being Fortune number one, is just really, really big. And what that means is that it doesn't matter what you do within the company, by default, you're automatically the biggest in the entire world, right? If you're a buyer that sells works on salsa or rice, like, you're automatically like the biggest seller of rice or salsa. Like, my little brother was a buyer for Walmart. He was 25 years old. They gave him the salsa account, and automatically he's the largest buyer of salsa on the planet. And I'm just like, you guys know, like, my little brother, right? That's not a great idea. But that's the way it works. It's just everybody kind of takes that for granted. I've got 11,300 stores in 27 different countries under 58 different banners. What do I mean by banner? So Walmart, you guys are familiar with Walmart Supercenter. That's one banner. Sam's Club, that's another banner. Walmart Neighborhood Market, that's another banner. Walmart To Go, Supermercados in Brazil, and it goes on and on and on, all these different brands that are out there across the world. But one of the biggest things that we have as far as massive scale goes is the number of people that work for us. There's 2.2 million associates, and I'll warn you right now, employees and associates. So if you work for Walmart, you call them associates, and I've had that drilled into my brain for 16 years. So when I say associates, that's what I mean, employees. There's 2.2 million of us. There's 1.4 million in the United States alone. So what we like to say is that if there's a 1 in a million chance for something, that's going to happen literally every single day at Walmart. So beyond just the massive scale, there's also some major innovation going on within the company. And it's something that any company has to do to survive, but it's something that's really built into the DNA of the company. A lot of people don't know that Walmart was one of the pioneers of technologies like barcodes, like the belts at the registers, right? Walmart was one of the first adopters of that. Here's some other things that we've got going on just within the past year or two. Online grocery pickup, where you can place your grocery order within the app, drive into the store, and they throw it in your trunk, and off you go. They don't literally throw it in your trunk. They set it gently in your trunk. Things like Walmart Pay, which is essentially Apple Pay, but just for use at Walmart. A lot of people don't realize how huge that is. We're about to eclipse Apple Pay as the largest form of mobile payment on the planet. Again, just because we do it, generally, that means we're going to be the biggest out there. Things like scan and go, and autonomous tech like shelf scanners and floor scrubbers, things that take away some of the tedium from the jobs that are out there and enable our associates to do better and do more customer service. We've really worked to innovate on training as well. We have an app called Spark City, which is basically The Sims, except instead of living life, you're working at Walmart, which sounds really, really lame, but is actually really, really engrossing and will get you in there in no time. We'll train you as a stalker. But the point is that if you become really, really good at this game, it's like that movie, The Last Starfighter, where they beats the game and they beam him up and be like, hey, you're our hero now. It's kind of the same thing. And then VR training, where people are able to put on VR goggles and experience things in real life, or not real life, but in VR, versus just being told about something. They're able to experience that. So there's a lot of innovation going on, a lot of scale going on. But really what it boils down to is just having one single goal, and that is to be the most trusted brand in retail today. And the focal point for our time here today is going to be that guy over on the left, and that's Doug McMillon. He is our CEO. He's the guy who, when I started a couple of years ago in this position, they told me, you're going to be running Doug's social accounts. So the voice of the CEO is really where a lot of that trust begins. We actually heard about that in some of our presentations earlier today, where a lot of the value that a company has and a lot of the value the company represents is brought forward and embodied within the CEO and executive leadership. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump over to another presentation that I give to our new officers. So I have the privilege and the pleasure of every quarter going in front of new officers of the company. So these are VP level and above. Generally every quarter there's about 15 to 20 of them. And I go to them and I say, are you on social media? You know, some yes, some no. I'm like, great. If you're on social media today, let me help you. That is literally my job. Like, we have a lot of weird jobs at Walmart. Like, we have pilots, truck drivers. We have a couple meteorologists. We have a guy who does executive social media, right? My job is to make them look good on social media and help them to do a good job. My job is also to convince them that if they're not already on social media, to join. Because there are a couple reasons. We, and you'll see in these slides, we, what we in my case means is employees, the media, investors, recruits, folks like that. We want to hear from our leadership. Now, here's some stats from the Edelman Trust Barometer. I heard that mentioned earlier in his presentation, I think it was yesterday, and I'm sure you'll hear about it again. If you have not reviewed the Edelman Trust Barometer, you should check it out. There is a ton of great information in there. Here's two tidbits from it. 71% of people say that it is critically important for my CEO to respond in challenging times. And then another 58% say, I look to my employer to be a trustworthy source of information. So what that means is that people want to hear from their leadership, and when their leadership says things, they trust what it is that they have to say. People also need to be a part of something. So within that same trust barometer report, 76% of respondents said, my CEO should take the lead on change rather than waiting on government. And actually, this was in the last presentation in the big room a little bit earlier, where they mentioned this exact same thing. And you see it in across the spectrum, but you know, I think of people like Tim Cook at Apple. You guys remember when the big Dreamer debate was going on a few months ago? And Tim really, he stepped up and said, you know, hey, we need to support Dreamers. That's the right thing to do. Here's why. You know, we need to expand immigration because we need those people. Here's why. Those are things that government wasn't necessarily taking the lead on, but Tim felt the need to get out there in front of that and do the right thing. We've done that as well. There was an issue a while back around gun control. I don't know if you guys remember Dick's Sporting Goods said that they weren't going to sell guns anymore, right? The very next day, our leadership stepped up and said, hey, we're not going to sell ammunition to people under 18 years old or something like that any longer, right? People are looking for companies to take that lead rather than waiting on government in its rather dysfunctional state today to do the same thing. And we also need leadership in those spaces. So this is a headline from Bloomberg about Google. The headline, Google Talent Advantage Erodes as more workers doubt the CEO's vision. So there are a couple stats off to the left here, minus 10%. That's a percentage of respondents, fewer than last time, that said that they trust that the CEO has a vision. And then 18% fewer said that not only do they not trust that the CEO has a vision, but they don't expect that to change in the near future. So you're already down. People don't think you have a vision, but people don't think you're going to go back up again, right? They're not seeing you as that leader who could take that next step and show that vision. Now, do we think that the CEO of Google actually does have a vision? Like, yeah, you're the CEO of Google. Of course you have a vision of some kind. So the issue here isn't that the vision doesn't exist. It's that it's not being communicated properly, right? So here's what our leaders need us to communicate, or here's what we need our leaders to communicate. Now, again, this is from the Edelman Trust Barometer. I told you we'd be referencing that quite a bit. Here are the five things in priority order that our leaders need to be talking about. Now, number one, societal impact. What do I mean by that? Societal impact is going to be what impact you have on society, right? It's pretty straightforward. So this might be a great example today. There's flooding in Nebraska, right? And Walmart today announced that they were going to give $100,000 to the Red Cross for support of emergency services in those areas. There's an example of something that we can be talking about and saying, hey, Walmart has a positive societal impact in this way. We announced last week that we were giving $3 million to Girls Who Code to expand their programs into high school and into college. Again, societal impact, the positive things that you can do because of the scale that we have, the impact that we have on society because of that. So number two, organizational values. What is it that you as a company see as a good thing and need to share and demonstrate that that's a good thing? You think that's a good thing. So what this might be is, and we'll see this actually later on in the presentation, is lifting up those heroes within our space and saying, this is what good looks like. This person did a good thing. Let's celebrate them and what they do. Every time you do that, you're demonstrating what the values of the organization is. Number three, future direction. And this is actually a really big one for employees because they want to know what's going to happen next, what's going to affect them, what's going to affect their job, their career, their paycheck, what kind of changes are going to come into play. So a lot of the things that I talked about earlier on the innovation slide come into play here because we want to talk about, okay, if a shelf scanner is coming along that automatically shows which products are out of stock and automatically tells you that you need to go in and back and restock them, like, what does that mean for my position? Does that mean it's going away? No, it just means it's going to change, and here's how we're going to support you in that. Number four, a mission and a purpose. Walmart's mission and purpose is actually really easy and clear because it's in our tagline. It's, we save people money so they can live better. That's the lens that we look through. So everything that we do matches up with that mission. People need to know about that. And then number five, which is the bottom of the priority list, but actually when it comes to easy content, is actually where a lot of us are living day to day, is the how things work. So again, if we have a shelf scanning robot coming out, the temptation would be to, hey, let's talk about how that works. Let's talk about the technology behind that. Let's talk about, you know, hey, isn't it neat? It sees things and will go around people who are there and all this stuff. But that's not really what people care about the most. They would rather you talk about what that means for their position, what that means for society, etc. Any questions on this before I keep going? I should have said at the very beginning, please interrupt me with questions if you have them. Yes, sir. I manage quite a bit. Not everybody. And we'll actually get in a little bit more into the particular channels. But as far as the people goes, obviously Doug, our CEO, takes up a very big chunk of my time. And then I work with other people in their areas, communication teams and things like that, to help support other executives that I may not support directly, but provide direction and assistance to. Anything else before I go on? So that ends my theft of my other presentation from the executive training course. So I want to walk through four different things that we need to do as part of getting any executive on social media and doing it in an effective way. Number one, again, we just talked about this in the big room, so I feel really validated by that. I feel awesome about that. But number one, you have to know your why. You have to have a purpose. You have to have a need. If you can't come up with what your why is, and this is actually a bit of a barrier sometimes when it comes to launching new executives on social media, because a lot of times they'll come to me and say, well, I'm on LinkedIn, but I don't know why. Like, well, let's stop and examine why. And if you don't have a why, there's zero shame into saying, well, let's not do it. Because I think the only thing worse than not having that social media profile is doing it in a way that you don't have the structure around that. You don't have the why. You don't have the purpose. And it comes off in kind of a half-assed way to where you're actually doing more harm than good. So know your why. So I'm going to walk through three different kind of mini case studies here that help demonstrate what Doug's why is. I'm not going to tell you what Doug's why is, but at the end of the third one, I'm going to ask you to tell me if you could tell what Doug's why is, why he's doing all this. So this is actually, this photo is near and dear to my heart. It's actually the background of my laptop, which is a little stocky, it's a little weird, but it's the background of my laptop because this is the CEO on stage at our year beginning meeting in front of 4,000 other store managers talking about my project. So that was a great feel good moment for me. But we did this project on Doug's Instagram that we called 30 Days of Good. I remember earlier I told you we had 1.4 million associates in the United States, and that 1 in a million chance is happening every day. So we decided for the month of December that every day through the month, we would look for a great story, and then we would post about that great story and really celebrate those heroes that are already out there that we know exists. And so about the beginning of November, we just started sourcing stories, see what we could find. We got to about 20, and we're like, all right, we're at 20. Let's just leap off the cliff and then build the airplane on the way down and hope we can find 10 more by the end of the month. Thankfully, we did. But every day we talked about folks that either there was a guy who saved a family from a burning building. There was a guy who drove a truck to provide relief supplies during Hurricane Florence. There was a woman from Japan who had saved the life of someone who had passed out in front of a train. There was people who provided food for food banks. There was a guy from ASDA who came up with a quiet hour at his store so that parents of kids with developmental disorders or special needs could come in and not have like lights and music blaring, which was a big deal for that community. 30 different stories like that. And it actually went really great. It let us recognize those heroes. It let us celebrate those great moments. I think most importantly, it let us give permission. Remember I mentioned that earlier, we're talking about this is what good looks like. And now here he is in front of 4,000 other store managers and saying, these are great associates. This is a good thing that they're doing. Let's do more of that. Right? And that was a total win for us. That's exactly why we did it. So that's case number one. So case number two, this is something that rolls around four times a year. It's quarterly earnings. How can we make quarterly earnings exciting? Well, last quarter we made it exciting by having the best quarter that we had in a decade, so kind of by default it was already amazing. But what we started doing is doing these little videos with Doug, and we're putting them on his channels, specifically Facebook, and letting him have that one-on-one communication with people on Facebook, explaining to them face-to-face, here's exactly how we did. Really getting into the details, because within the industry and even within our stores, people really value that. They want to know not only how you did, but how what they did affected that and how they can make it better. And then finally, we really wanted Doug to be able to say, you matter, right? You make a difference. You are important, and have that ability to do that on a one-on-one basis. So that's case number two, quarterly earnings. And then finally, case number three is more of an area of thought leadership. So if you are at all familiar with our company, you've probably heard of the VPI item, which is a little bit redundant. It's kind of like ATM machine. VPI stands for volume producing item. And what that is it helps us to really embrace our role as merchandisers and say, there's one particular item that I think is really underdeveloped, and we could sell a lot more of those if we just paid attention to it. So every year, people from every level of the company pick their VPI, and then they just market the heck out of it and do everything that they can to turn that item around. So Doug's item this last year was the single-pack Hot Wheels die-cast car. And which the Hot Wheels guy? Is there the Hot Wheels guy in here? No? Okay. So Doug really loves Hot Wheels. It's their 50th anniversary. So he thought he was just going to pick that up and do it. So at last year's year beginning meeting, he announced to all 4,000 store managers, this is my item. If your store has the greatest percentage increase in sales on this particular item, I will come to your store and I will wash your car, right? So automatically there's just like this, like, what? Doug's going to come to my store and wash my car? The CEO of Fortune Number One is going to come wash my car. So last month that actually happened. And fortunately for Doug, the winner was in Puerto Rico. I don't know what would have happened if it was in Minnesota or Alaska or something. That would have been really bad. But you can see it actually written on the guy's car there. He increased sales by 1,000%, which that is a lot of Hot Wheels diecast cars. So that was an event, and we had fun with it. We post about it on Instagrams and things like that, but we really thought, what else can we do with this bit of content? And I'll talk to a little bit more later about slicing the watermelon. Have you guys ever heard that expression? It's like taking one bit of content and saying, what are all the things that we can do with that? So we took one event, Doug washing this guy's car, turned it into Instagram posts, but we also turned it into a long-form article on LinkedIn, where we were able to say all the things I just said about the history of the VPI, how it started with Sam Walton and Moon Pies, again, legendary things within the company, but not necessarily something that people outside know about. So we were able to talk about that, do a really deep dive into what next year is going to look like with VPI items. He was able to show that leadership, right? I made a promise, and I kept my promise, right? That was the number one comment within LinkedIn. It's like, hey, Doug's making promises, and he's keeping them. And then also to build excitement, because if he's doing it this year, now what is he going to do next year? Like, I don't know what he's going to do next year. We have to one-up this somehow. That's my number one concern with this whole thing. So that's case number three. So based on those three cases, what do you guys feel like is Doug's why? What's his purpose? Yeah, and one person can make a difference, right? If you're part of the army of 2.2 million, it's like, what difference could I possibly make? I'm just one person. Well, let me tell you, right? Exactly. When I first started this job, I had the opportunity to meet with Doug and just ask him, like, what's your why? What do you want to get out of this? And he told me two things. He told me, I wanted people to see me as a real human. That was the first thing he told me. And then the second thing he told me is he wanted people to get help when they needed it. So if people are messaging him, things like that, he wanted them to know that there was a place that they could go to. So whenever we're commenting as Doug, he's commenting himself, one of the number one comments we make as Doug is, please email me at doug.mcmillan@walmart.com and I will help you. Like, that's probably the number one comment that we make, because that's what he wants to get out of it. That's his why. But there's also all these extra bonuses, like retention, like feeling that you're part of a team, you're something bigger than yourself, right? Those, all those things from that slide previously that we need to know as employees and that our executives can give us when we're out there. So great job. Great job. So that's number one, know your why. Number two is to know your audience. Know where they are and what they need. So what the first thing that we did is to basically just make a list and say, who are our communication targets? And I've already mentioned some of these already. This is just an alphabetical order. Employees / associates, influencers, investors, media, recruits, shoppers. This is just for Doug, but it could be any number of things for you depending on your market. Like it could be farmers, right? That could be a target. So once you've defined the targets, now what do? Well, now you're going to rank the targets, and you're going to talk about who it is that we want to talk to the most. So again, you can probably guess for Doug, number one target is employees. That's who he wants to be talking to the most. And from there, recruits. So you got the top two targets are people who work for you, people who are going to work for you in the future, right? There was one crazy stat I heard one time that 40% of the United States will at some point in their lives either work for Walmart or know someone who did, which is crazy, right? I mean, you hear, like I said, there's those type of scale stats where it's like 90% of America lives within 10 miles of a Walmart, right? You're going to make an impact as a company, and everybody's going to make their own special impact. How do we talk to them as a target group and make sure that our message is getting to them? From there, we look at the media and influencers. In some ways, those are kind of the same target. A lot of people talk about Walmart. You should see my Google News alerts for Walmart. It is going bananas constantly. You should see our PR department. They're ragged. And then you got five and six at the end, shoppers and investors. Shoppers is probably, when it comes to just pure numbers, is the largest of these groups. It's like 300 and something million every week. But they're not who Doug is talking to because he knows his why. And his why is not, I want everybody to shop at Walmart, right? I think to him that's a little bit of a side benefit, but that's not why he's on social. You know, that's why we run commercials. And then finally, investors. Investors, just from the standpoint of we want them to know what we're spending our money on. We want to be able to speak to them on platforms like LinkedIn and get their input and make sure that they're fully informed. From there, we're going to divide our time. You asked me earlier who takes up most of our time as far as employees go. Obviously, the answer to that is Doug. And the pie chart for Doug versus anybody else looks a lot like this, actually, where half of our time is with our biggest voice, our most trusted voice, the one that we know that will make the most difference, and that's Doug. For our target markets, our target audiences, we're going to do the same thing. There's employees and recruits that are taking up half our time, and then we divide our other half up into two sections. Again, media and investors, and then shoppers and influencers at the end. And really, if this were 100% accurate, I would take that green section and maybe make it a little bit bigger at the expense of the red section, because that's really where we're spending our time. That's where we know we can make the most impact. So this will probably look different for you as you think about who your different groups, who your target groups are, and where the most effective use of your time is going to be. All right. So you notice that up to this point, we haven't really talked about platforms, because the platform conversation really doesn't come until all of these other things are in place. I told you one of the biggest challenges we have is some executive coming up and saying, well, I'm on Instagram, but I really only use it for personal things. It's like, well, we're already behind, because we don't know your why, we don't know your audience, we don't know what your priorities are, all these other things that lead up to going where the conversation already is. One of the earlier presentations from today talked about, someone asked a question in the audience, like, you know, when an executive says, you know, I'm scared to do this, all this sort of stuff. And the response, which was great, I was, yes, was that the flip side to that is, why wouldn't you participate in that conversation? Like, the bigger risk is not participating, because the conversation is happening with or without you. The only difference is whether or not you're there, right? If you don't have those trusted voices to make those types of differences, then you might as well. That's the biggest risk, right? If you, let's say theoretically, you had a data breach, if you had a CIO that was just kicking tail on social media and was already a trusted voice, if he goes on to his Twitter and says, hey, there was a data breach, but we're on it, we're working on it, right? We know we messed up. Like, that's an awesome thing. That's a great weapon at your disposal, versus just a brand saying, you know, hey, this happened, we're really sorry. You know, that's not where the trust is, and that's not where it should be whenever you have great executives on social media. So the platform decision comes last. What that looks like for us, and again, this will look different for you. On Instagram, we're talking to employees and recruits and influencers. On Facebook, we're talking to employees, recruits, and shoppers. And on LinkedIn, we're talking to recruits, media, and investors. Again, Employees and recruits are taking half of our time, so they're going to obviously be very prominent in this particular list. All right, so now we know our why, now we know our audience. Next, we need to know our limits, because no one likes to go into the office of the CEO and the CEO says, how much time is this going to take exactly? And you're like, I don't know, right? Actually, the goal of everything that I do today is to prevent you from going in there and giving the shrug, right? Nobody wants to do that. So know your limits. Time and access commitments are key. So the first thing we're going to do in that area is to build a content lens. And this is probably one of the more important things that I'm going to talk to you guys about today. And this is the content lens for Doug. So what do I mean by a content lens? Let me just tell you what I've got. So Instagram, for example, we're going to focus on unique, behind the scenes, and DIY. We're going to show what good looks like, and we're going to celebrate accomplishments. Okay? Those are the three things that we're going to do. So if someone comes up to me and says, hey, we've got this polished ad, and we want Doug to show it on Instagram, I'm going to look through the lens, and I'm going to say, nope, not going to do that. Because it doesn't fit with our why. It doesn't fit with all the commitments that we made. It doesn't fit with our audience. It just doesn't make sense. And if there's one thing I've learned managing the social media profiles of the CEO of Fortune Number One is that you get a lot of requests, right? And if I said yes to everything, then it would just be a mess. It'd be a mess. Like, none of it would work. Like, my why would be out the window. My audience would be like, what are you doing, right? This content lens will save you. It will help you get to yes in just a way that might not have been expected, but in a way that's much more effective. So on Facebook, my lens is welcome to our world. We're going to elevate the best of the best, and we're going to build community via access. So access to Doug as the Fortune Number One CEO, right? So if you ask a question on Facebook, Doug's going to answer you. And I can't make that same community as much in those other places, especially with our employee base. Especially with our shopper base. So if you go out to Doug's Facebook today, you'll see, you know, somebody complaining about shopping carts in Minnesota, right? And CEO of Fortune Number One saying, you know, hey, I'm sorry about that. Thanks for letting me know. We'll get to the right teams, right? And that's crazy awesome. People love it. People love it. Same thing with Instagram. If we do things like, you know, like something. Or if Doug comments on something, like, people go crazy. They'll love it. Like, one of the great things about it is knowing that even the little things make a huge difference. In fact, I'm glad I didn't forget it. I thought I would forget this. So this is Walmart World Magazine. Yes, we have our own magazine. It goes out to all 4,000 and some odd stores in the United States every month. And it's actually really great. They have a lot of stories. In here about associates, they have milestones. So if you celebrate like a 20-year anniversary or something like that, you get your picture in here. Let me find the page. So this is last month's. There's a story about Alexandros, who is the store manager in Somerdale, New Jersey. I've never been to Somerdale, New Jersey. I don't know Alexandros. Alexandros' store is on Instagram, and you guys remember whenever the big romaine lettuce scare came out and everybody's just like, throw all the romaine off the wall, right? Well, romaine lettuce came back, thank goodness. And Alexandros posted to his store's Instagram and he says, romaine calm, all caps, romaine calm. Our produce wet wall is back in stock and it's kind of a big deal. So let us celebrate and come check out our produce department. And he has a bunch of like carrots and broccoli emojis, which cute, right? So we saw this and we're like, okay, if Doug could respond to this, what would he say? Like, you've already got romaine calm, big deal, and let us celebrate. So he's already taken all the good puns. So I wheeled around in my chair and talked to our writer staff and I said, okay, like, hit me with some puns, right? So we came up the pun way to beat BET expectations. And ran it by Doug. He's like, awesome. We posted it and didn't think anything else of it, right? And so this story actually is about Alexandros and what he does, but it's also about that comment. So here's the comment over here, thing that we did in like 30 seconds. But there's a quote here from Alexandros. The story says, his approach is working, customers praise the store, and the team was thrilled when Doug McMillan, president and CEO of Walmart, commented on a post, quote, from Alexandros, I showed it to my management team and the associates and said, hey guys, the CEO is commenting on your, and in italics, your post. And that kind of stuff is just gold, right? Like, we didn't intend for that to happen. We didn't even know we were making a difference in this particular store. We just came up with a dumb pun and did it. But that kind of stuff, building, going where the conversation is, knowing who your audience is, it makes a huge difference. And that's why it's so powerful for me especially, to know that as one person, we can make a difference. I didn't mention our lens for LinkedIn. We're sharing big news. We're explaining innovation. We're showcasing events where we can get really, really in depth and get really nerdy with some stuff on LinkedIn. That's a lot of fun. Yes. Do we use what? I'm sorry. Twitter? Not for Doug. Not for Doug. And that's because of this slide right here. Great segue. Thank you. So we want to set cadence expectations, because we know that every post we do is a little bit of that executive's time. And the reason that I don't do Twitter is, one, his audience isn't on Twitter, right? So I know that I don't have to worry about that as a platform. That's why that comes last. But then also because of the cadence expectations. Like, if I'm on Twitter, how many times am I going to be expected to post a week? Like, 5, 6, 7? You know, who knows? Like, do I want to go to the CEO of Fortune number 1 7 days a week and be like, hey, I want to post this on your Twitter? Like, you know, even other CEOs or even other executives, like, there are some executives on our group, like the CIO that I mentioned earlier, Clay Johnson. He does a fantastic job. He's on Twitter all the time. He's a nut. I love it. My job is just to stay out of his way and let him do his thing. But that's where his audience is, because he's high tech, right? Where his audience just isn't there. We could do it, but there wouldn't be any value for us. Boy, I'm glad you asked. Actually, that's the next slide after this. I'm glad you asked. So after we've set the cadence expectations, we're combining best practice with the real world. Someone asked me once, how do I know what the cadence is? I just Googled it, right? What are the expectations? There's some great resources like Sprout Social that'll tell you, like, what's the best time of day to post, all that sort of stuff. It's all out there. And what we've done is we have sneakily built a playbook. So the playbook is your Bible. The playbook is what lets you say yes. So we've already talked about the channel. We've talked about our plan. We've talked about our cadence. We haven't talked about our KPIs, but really that is kind of at the tail end of things for me and getting this set up. I have a version of this playbook for every executive that I support. And what that does is it lets me build that lens. It lets me know what it is, the type of content that I'm looking for. So everybody needs to build a playbook. They're amazing. So within the cadence, so what I do is I look at each individual plan and each individual lens. So if someone comes to me and says, you know, hey, which they did today. So Walmart gave $100,000 to Red Cross for Nebraska relief. I'm like, okay, where might that fit on here, right? And then I build out a calendar. It's actually a Google Sheet. Like, it's the most ghetto calendars in the world. It's just a Google Sheet, and I just map out the next 2 weeks for Doug. Like, I say, okay, where is Doug going to be? Okay, Doug is going to be at this conference. Okay, that's a post I can do. He's going to be at this store. Okay, there's a post I can do. He's going to be, this guest is going to be here. Okay, that's a post that I can do. And then I look at company events and I say, okay, you know, what's happening during these times? You know, and then I basically build it out through there. And then when someone comes to me and says, hey, will Doug post about this? I look against what's already a priority for me. And I look at that cadence and I say, okay, you'll fit in here, right? It's a bit like going to the doctor and they're like, hey, we can talk to you in 2 weeks. Having multiple channels and multiple cadence lets me say yes more frequently and in a better way, and in a way that's more effective for their audience. All right, number 4, own the risks. I'm running short on time, so we're going to blast through this. We're going to plan for the worst. We're going to hope for the best. How are we going to do that? We're going to say, what could possibly go wrong on the internet, right? A little while ago, a couple of years ago, the local Facebook for Walmart did a contest, and they said whoever gets the most likes on their page will have Pitbull come to your store and do a concert. That got out on the internet. Guess where Pitbull went? Alaska, right? The internet sent Pitbull to Alaska, to a store that was literally supplied by plane. It was the most remote place because people hate Pitbull for whatever reason. But when you think about what could possibly go wrong, a lot of things. That's why you need a lot of help. And strong partnerships with people like legal, who are going to be like your number one like naysayers in this whole thing, is super key. And this is going to sound super simplistic, but It's really effective. And there's two parts to getting legal to say yes. And this is a whole nother presentation. I give a whole hour on how you get legal to say yes. But really what it boils down to is sticking to a process. Understanding what that process is, understanding where legal comes in, and then taking away their weapons. Okay? So this is for every post, we do the same thing. We create an offline draft, right? Why do we say offline? It's because if you put a tweet into Twitter and then you accidentally hit that, you know, you're posting something that's a draft. So whenever legal says, well, what happens when you accidentally post a draft? You say, well, we're not going to accidentally post a draft because we do everything offline. So ha! Right? And you do that over and over again, creating this process and also reviewing the what ifs. So what if the account is hacked? Well, we use two-factor authentication, and we have all the things logged in through Percolate or Sprinklr or whatever, so that's not going to happen. Or if it could, here, if it did, here's what we would do to respond. You know, what if someone we feature is fired? Well, you know, every time we feature an associate, we call HR and we say, hey, is this person a good representative of the company? Are they in good standing? So, ha, there's another weapon we just took from you, legal, right? What if my executive quits or resigns? This literally happened to me today. Our head of Walmart e-commerce, Jeremy King, who is one of the executives I support, quit today. I had no idea, but I know what I'm going to do because we've already thought about this scenario. It's all about getting ahead, one step ahead of legal. And not that you're trying to like outsmart them or trick them, which, but it does feel good when that happens, but being a partner with them and knowing what risks they're trying to manage and helping them do that. So review the what ifs. So in summary, four pieces. Find your purpose. Know who you're talking to. Know where they are, and then maximize your time investment. I talked about slicing the watermelon. So if your CEO is in a 30-minute podcast, that's one piece of content. But there's also quote graphics. There's audio blocks. There's short snippets of videos that you can put on Instagram stories. There's all these other ways that you can slice that content to maximize that time investment. So you may do a 30-minute interview, and you may get 40 pieces of content out of it. All right, that's it. What questions do you guys have for me? And how much time do we have, first off? I'm sorry. 1 minute. Yes, there was a debate about $15 an hour, and our head of HR was just, like, blasted by trolls on Twitter. But because of that, because of the planning that we did in advance, we said, okay, this might happen. We know this is an issue. We have a strong partnership with our PR team to know, okay, if someone says, you know, Walmart's not a good employer because they don't offer $15 an hour, we know to say, well, actually, you know, our average starting wage is like $17 an hour, and did you know that we also offer benefits, so 401k and paid maternity leave that's top in the nation, like all this sort of stuff that we can use to help drive our particular narrative, especially when it comes to situations like that. The risks are absolutely, you don't sound like a real person, or you're too slow, right? Those are the two big risks. And that's why we worked with our team to say, okay, if I'm going to post as our CEO, I'm going to run it past his speechwriter and his handler, and then I'm going to send it to him. And then if he has edits, I take those edits as they are, and off it goes. And it has to be that simple to be effective. And because of the work that we did to mitigate those risks with legal or to partner with them so that they know we're taking these specific steps, and plus we have really great partners who are trying to get to yes. You know, if the default position is no, like you're going to have a lot tougher row to hoe than if they're already trying to get to yes, because we had already gone through and already worked to sell them on that type of thing. So, does that help?
Yeah. It's great that you have a legal department.
It took a lot of work. It took a lot of work. Like I said, it's going to sound really simplistic, but that was probably 2 years worth of effort to get to that point. Whenever we first started with Doug on Facebook, the average response time was 11 days. And we've got it down to minutes because we said, okay, Doug's going to say thank you. I don't want to go to Doug. I don't want to go to legal every time I say thank you. I want to say thank you. So here's 15 ways we say thank you. Legal, are you good with those? Doug, are you good with those? Boom. And now it's down to minutes. Thank you, guys. Thank you.